Do do do.
There's no bell. Oh, there's bell.
I am. I was just getting a big piece. I was getting a big piece of ham to eat, but then I realized I got to do the intro, so I'm not going to be eating this ham.
I picture you with like a big mutton joint in your hand.
I have a big block of ham. It's not even sliced. It's like part of what they just sliced off. And and I'm looking at a picture of you as a pig boy, and I'm eating a piece of ham. Like a cannibal.
Pig boy.
Pig boy. I got to eat one piece.
Everyone loves the pig boy.
Hold on a second. Oh, I had to just take one bite of this. Mm. Delicious. You're delicious, Paul.
All right, well, so that was our last episode of DS9. Join them next week when it's Andy Bill and someone else.
Ah, but now you have an opener.
Whenever you're ready, Bill, bring us in.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
Your Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple, Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast. And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro.
Bloody hell.
Hello and welcome to another riveting, soul-searching, evolving episode of Listen to the Prophets. I today am your bringer-inner, otherwise known as the host with the most, Dr. Bill Robinson. And with me, as always, are my two cohorts in crime, Mr. Andrew Leyland.
Hello.
And Paul, delicious pig boy, Spataro.
All the things you've been called, Paul, is delicious pig boy one of the best?
I'm pretty sure it's the first time I've ever been called that.
You've been called pig boy before because of your photo on Skype.
Never delicious pig boy.
Roast you over a spit, spin you around.
Is it me or does Bill sound like he's enjoying this far too much?
Yeah, absolutely it sounds like he's enjoying
it. Well, I was just munching on some of the ham from Thanksgiving and it's just, you know, that picture and, you know.
Put Paul on a spit, turn him round, roast him till he's crackling.
Glaze him.
Oh, Paul, you should never go to one of Bill's barbecues. I don't think you're coming out alive.
I don't think he's going to invite me up to his house this year. Now, he's like, no.
Or well, you know, other people would be happy that it would be a true barbecue, though.
Oh, I'm not putting a rub on you, so. For further barbecuing tips, see the back episode of Back to the Bins. The whole barbecue versus a rub discussion. Because some people say a barbecue is not a barbecue unless you rub something on the meat.
Stay away from
some people
meat.
Say if you cook outside, it's a barbecue. So I say I don't care as long as I get some food.
And that's always
speaking
been my,
of food,
my final bottom line to it.
Yeah. The food was free and I'm not complaining.
My thought was whoever's supplying the food gets to define the word.
Yeah. Yes. So, but we have any Star Trek barbecue news? Grilled Vulcan ribs? Ferengi pot stickers?
Would Vulcans have grilled ribs given that they're vegetarians?
Well, that means they're grain-fed, corn-fed Vulcans. This is just going a little dark, isn't it? Vulcan ribs. Ferengi ears. The tastiest part of the Ferengi.
Tastiest part of a Vulcan, I think. Unless that Vulcan's T'Pring, who obviously has other tasty parts.
Ooh, this is the doc. This is the Federation cookbook by Dr. Lecter.
I don't know. I don't think I cook T'Pring. It rhymes with cook, though.
You're gonna give her a book?
Yes, I'm going to give her a book.
Gonna read her a book. That's it. Yeah.
And then give her the look.
Okay.
And then maybe she'll move it on.
Well, all right. Any Star Trek news, non-food related? I don't believe we have any from our last week, which was, well, I don't know,
10 minutes ago.
Four minutes ago. And from the week before that was an hour ago. So not much has happened in the last 2 hours in the way of Star Trek news that I know of.
You know what we're going to do? Well,
too much speaking behind the curtain. Sorry.
You know Bill still doesn't see Star Trek Beyond.
What?
We're going to wrap up the Bible.
Oh, is this the last one?
It's our last entry.
Oh, we'll take it away.
And the last entry is Kai Opaka, the spiritual leader of Bajor, who provides sharp counterpoint to the secular nature of Starfleet. She challenges conventional human logic. The Kai explores her guest's Pa, roughly translated energy meridian, through deep tissue massage of their ears that seems to reveal their true nature. Opaka tells Sisko in the opening episode that the commander is on a personal journey and that he has been sent to Bajor to find the celestial temple of the prophets, the source of the mysterious orbs. When Sisko investigates, he discovers the wormhole and the aliens who built it. Kai seems to have an awareness on a higher plane of consciousness, knows things she cannot possibly know. Although our people do not accept her powers at face value, we cannot always explain them either. She speaks in vague, mystical, and indirect language, forcing the listener to seek her meaning. Now, they really didn't explore that very much on the show, and they ditched Kai Opaka really early on. Mm-hmm. And I think it would have been interesting if they had shown a little bit more of the dilemma. I do think eventually, you know, certainly, especially with Louise Fletcher playing Kai Winn, I do think there they made the right choice there in getting to that. But I think it might have been better served if they had shown the spiritual Kai Opaka first, and really given you a feel for what she was like, and shown the dilemma that was, you know, that the Federation had in accepting or denouncing her wisdom. I think it could have made for some interesting drama, and I think that was maybe a missed opportunity.
So there was no Bible entry for Kai Winn?
No.
Kai Winn was nothing when the show began, was she? Kai Winn developed because they liked Louise Fletcher a lot more than the actor who played Opaka.
How do you think things would have turned out if Louise Fletcher, say, had played Kai Opaka to begin with?
I think she's a great actress and would have been able to pull it off, but I don't think the character would be as compelling.
How might the show have been different? Like, would we have seen Kai Opaka stick around a little while longer and we would never have got a Kai Winn? Or, well, maybe they just would have had a different... I don't know. I think she defines that role. So I don't, you know, just kind of curious playing the what-if question. What if she had been Kai Opaka versus her other role?
I'm thinking what happened is that they originally planned to have Kai Opaka be a more significant character, didn't really see the potential there, got rid of her, and eventually settled in on Kai Winn being a more compelling character. And I think that was the right course. But I think they could have mined a little bit more drama out of Opaka before they got rid of her.
Unceremoniously dumped her on the planet with the guy from Wise Guy?
Yeah.
Yes, she was a dumped. So, I guess we'll...
I'm total silence.
Sorry, this is where I picked the show back up. I was
busy eating.
Actually, I did.
I'm gonna just finish off the last thing in the Bible before you do that. Star Trek: Deep Space Nine brings into the Star Trek universe an original set of characters as diverse and memorable as the crews of the first two series. It also provides far more interpersonal conflict than we've seen before in the 24th century. If, as Gene Roddenberry always said, Star Trek is wagon train in space, think of Deep Space Nine as Fort Laramie on the edge of the frontier. Rick Berman and Michael Piller. And this is copyrighted 1992.
Wow.
And that is the end of the Bible. So endeth the lesson.
Thank you, Mr. Connery.
And thank you, Mr. Tyler, for sending us the Bible.
Yes, thank you very much, Chris Tyler. You are the man.
Now, the hair metal hero man. So now on to Profit Motive, the 62nd episode and the 16th episode of the third season, in which Grand Nagus Zek comes to the station to present Quark with a revised copy of something.
A Ferengi without profit.
You rewrote the rules of acquisition. I hope you like them.
Is no Ferengi at all.
Greed is dead.
There's nothing beyond greed.
Has Quark's leader gone mad?
There's something deeply wrong with him.
I like you!
The Ferengi future is in total chaos.
Tell me money.
He's sick, I tell you.
Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
And this was directed by René Auberjonois. Oh, I think I said that right.
Excellent, Bill.
Thank you. Thank you. And you said that as you were metaphorically or you were patting me on the head, weren't you?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Written by Ira Stephen Bear, Robert Hewitt Wolf. Story by William N. Stape. And I mess up an easy one. And our guest stars were Max Grodnick as Rom, Wallace Shawn as Zek, Tiny Ron as Mardu, and Juliana Donald as Emmy. Grand Nagus Zek, the spiritual leader of the Ferengi race and Quark's idol, arrives on the station and shows Quark and Rom his new project. He has rewritten the rules of acquisition, the sacred business proverbs by which the Ferengi live. In the new book, Zek encourages Ferengi everywhere to renounce selfishness and greed and become kind and giving. Ooh, boy. Zek now wants to lead a life of altruism and wants Quark and Rom to run his charitable foundation. This horrifies Quark and Rom because profiteering lies at the heart of Ferengi identity, and the Grand Nagus is supposed to be the paragon. Dr. Bashir can find no sign of mental or physical illness in Zek, and his uncharacteristic behavior does not appear to be a ruse. Wanting answers, Quark and Rom break into Zek's shuttle and discover an orb of the prophets, which Zek is planning to give as a gift to the Bajorans. When Quark is exposed to the orb, he has a vision in which Zek describes the new rules of acquisition as a quote-unquote gift. Quark deduces that Zek visited the wormhole and contacted the prophets so that he could use their knowledge of the future for profit, and that they are responsible for Zek's transformation. Quark forcibly takes Zek back to the wormhole to ask the prophets what they did to him. The prophets, being immaterial creatures who do not experience time literally, found Zek's obsession with accumulation of material wealth to be strange and adversarial. They de-evolve him to a more primitive state resembling the less greedy ancestors of the Ferengi. They threaten to de-evolve Quark as well, but Quark warns them that if he is also changed, more curious Ferengi will visit the wormhole looking for answers. Because the prophets like their privacy and find Ferengi annoying, they release Quark and restore Zek to normal. Zek dismantles his charitable foundation and has all copies of the new rules of acquisition destroyed. After Zek leaves, Rom confides that he embezzled money from Zek's foundation, which delights and impresses Quark. A subplot involves Bashir being nominated for a medical award, which he ends up not winning. Bashir feigns nonchalance, but inside he is seething. Well, that's all they have. Two sentences for that.
Well, that's because the subplot kind of sucked.
Yeah. But I'm going to jump to the subplot for just a second. Knowing what we know about Bashir later, I don't think it involves this, but now having hindsight, you could kind of tie this back to this, that maybe he was feigning nonchalance because he was hiding, or, you know. Do you know, you guys know where I'm going with that without me having to come out and say where I'm going with it?
Yes, I do know where you're going with that.
But I don't think that was put here for that. Do you? Do you think they were thinking this far ahead?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I agree with Andy. I don't think they had that planned yet.
But, I mean, so I'm just reading into it based on my future knowledge.
Yes, you're basically no-prizing it.
Yeah. So.
And also, it kind of shows that it can work with the future knowledge. It doesn't contradict the future knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
That's our Borg, Andy Leyland.
Yeah, I know.
Resistance is futile.
You're coming through a bit Borgish. What's going on? Have you been taken over?
Yes.
Okay. But back to the main plot. I thought Quark was pretty sneaky in the way he kind of convinced the, you know, because the prophets were ready to basically change him and make him like Zek, and he was able to tap dance and negotiate his way out of being changed to a good little Ferengi. You know, pat him on the head, send him back out of the wormhole.
That was, in my opinion, the biggest weakness in the episode, was the flaw in logic of Quark, which maybe I'm wrong, and maybe you can convince me that I'm wrong, but if the prophets can see time in a non-linear fashion, past, present, future, then Quark saying to them, oh, you miscalculated because the Ferengi are going to keep coming, really kind of loses its teeth, because they know if they're going to keep coming or not, because they can see the future already. So there's nothing there that should surprise them about what's going to be the repercussions of their actions.
But knowing what we know and how Quark will actually kind of help things in the future, maybe they were letting Quark think, you know, the I know that you know that I know, that they were letting Quark...
If they were trying to manipulate Quark, and that was ultimately their goal here, and they were, you know, looking at the bigger picture from day one, then I'm good with that. But if it's, you know, they miscalculated, they reprogrammed Zek, and they thought, okay, this is the way to go, until Quark convinced them otherwise, that loses some of its credibility to me. So I guess I have to go with your explanation.
Aha!
So by default, Bill's right.
Andy, you're really breaking up. Maybe try and come out and come back in.
Okay.
Bloop-a-doo.
Back?
Yep.
Oh, and you sound much better.
Okay.
Yes, you did sound modulated like a Borg.
I am Locutus of Borg. Oh, all right. I thought you were just playing.
No, you were like...
if you actually listened to the edited episode, eventually you'll hear.
Yes, you will have to listen to this one. Because you did sound like Locutus of Borg. It wasn't static, it was just...
Ooh, fair enough. All right, well, as long as we're okay now.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So, I was a little confused why, in the beginning of the episode, Zek is hidden and you don't see him, unless they were wanting to hide his the physical change, like smiling and not being grumpy, maybe.
I don't think that physical change was so stark that it would jump out at you anyway.
Because at first I was worried that Wallace Shawn was not going to be in, like oh, maybe they've... I'm like, I didn't remember a different actor. But I was concerned as to why he was covered up when you first see him, because he just comes in, looks like, you know, death out of, he looks like the Ferengi Grim Reaper while walking in and taking over Quark's quarters with Mardu behind him, and basically kicks Rom out. And then we got a brief, I guess we could call it the Ferengi Odd Couple with Quark and Rom staying in Rom's quarters. And then Quark quickly realizes all the stuff in the quarters is stuff that's missing from his bar. Table, the linen, the bottle of Aldebaran whiskey, the Nog's, what was that, like soap, like bubble drink or something?
I think my main problem with this episode is the Prophets rewrite the Grand Nagus's mind.
They devolve him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, do they really have the right to do that?
Can they really do that? They have that type of power?
If they can do that, then why did they not do that with Sisko or whatever, so nobody knew that they were there? Back in the pilot. And it kind of just leaves a sour taste in your mouth over what is essentially just a light, fluffy comedy episode that, if you really start thinking about it, they've mind-raped this guy.
They Professor Xavier'd him.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. Professor Xavier'd him, and there's no consequences of that. It's all just played as a comedy hijinks episode.
Yeah, but they didn't just mind wipe him. They completely changed his...
Yeah, they rewrote his personality.
Yeah. Which is a lot worse than just removing a memory.
Yeah. So it's like, on the one hand, this is funny, and genuinely so in places, largely because of Armin Shimerman and Max Grodenchik, who are really genuinely good as a double act. But it's ultimately offset by that slight little thing that you've got at the back of your head, that there's a very serious, deep theme in this that they just didn't even bother exploring.
Just a very interesting trivia fact from Memory Alpha on this, as to the origins of this episode. The origins of the teleplay for this episode can be found in Iris Stephen Bayer's early career. When he was trying to make it in Hollywood, he wrote a teleplay for the TV show Taxi, entitled Uncle Sylvester, to try to demonstrate his writing abilities. The plot revolved around Sylvester, uncle to the main character Louis. Sylvester had built up a reputation for being a shameless womanizer and an altogether unpleasant individual, and he was Louis's hero. Louis was dying to meet him to impress him with his own womanizing abilities, but when Sylvester arrives, he no longer enjoys womanizing and now just wants to get back with his wife. Louis is heartbroken and becomes convinced that Sylvester has undergone some type of deep psychological trauma. So, I mean, it's like the same episode, only it's a sitcom episode. And I think it's fascinating to think that he had this storyline in his mind and then eventually worked it onto DS9. And like you said, Andy, it is kind of done as a, you know, for comic relief almost. But they did tie it into the whole Prophets, which, you know, I think it's kind of cool. You know, the moral dilemmas aside, and obviously you did hit on the moral dilemmas of what they can and can't do.
Ah, morals. Ah.
Morals, as long as I'm rich.
Exactly.
You Ferengi, you.
So we got to see a little more... Sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I kind of enjoyed the fact that Rom is perfectly willing to just go along with it. He doesn't think there's anything wrong with the Nagus's change in personality. In fact, if anything, it probably reflects more of Rom's real way of looking at things. And it to me, it makes Rom a little bit more of a nuanced character, because on the one hand, he accepts the change in way of life, but on the other hand, he's enough of a Ferengi that he's got half of Quark's bar in his apartment. So I like that they give him
later,
a little bit of depth.
A good part of Zek's... And then he also embezzles part of the charitable foundation.
Yes.
But he screws up when he says, they're like... When the Nagus, I destroyed all copies of that book. And then, And then Rob's like, except for the one in my head. And they turn and look at him like,
Well, Rob isn't necessarily supposed to be the brightest bulb.
Right. And then Quark's like, oh, don't worry. A week from now, he would have forgotten all that. Ah, okay. But we got to see a little bit, I don't know if you want to say character development of Mardu. Because even he realizes that something's wrong with the Negus, and he's upset about it. You know, he's sitting in the floor crying.
Yeah, and he lets them into the Negus's chambers.
Mm-hmm. And apparently, well, I don't know if that was really his voice. I'm assuming it was. When he's in the... when the prophets visualize themselves to Quark... They do so in the form of everybody in the cast, and they also use Mardu, Tiny Ron, and they speak. He speaks there, whereas apparently, you know, his character is not supposed to speak. They only speak to their master or owner or who they serve. So we actually got. I was kind of surprised about it. I was like, oh, he's talking. And then I was wondering, is that his real voice, or did they just, you know, dub that in? But I'm assuming that's his real voice.
That would be my assumption, but I guess we'll never know for certain. But yeah. I mean, while Mardu isn't supposed to speak to anybody else, that isn't Mardu. That's the prophet speaking through his visage.
Oh, exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And we get Morn in this episode, a long-awaited return to Morn.
But is it really a Morn?
Yay!
Because it's only in the prophet... It's only in the... In the wormhole. So is it really Morn?
I don't care. It's Morn. We get to see him on screen. I'm good.
It's Prophet Morn or Pseudo Morn. Faux Morn. Morn Faux.
Phony Morn.
Phony Morn. Phony Morn. And he was probably talking too. That's what they should have had. They should have had a talking Morn.
That would have actually been quite cool to have Morn talking, wouldn't it?
I don't know if we've brought... Have we actually brought this up on the show? Or was it only in a private chat where I was told you I played the Deep Space Nine game and went to Deep Space Nine? Not, excuse me. Star Trek Online, and actually went to the Deep Space Nine station and walked around the promenade. I can't remember if I brought that up on the show proper.
I don't recall.
I don't think you did. No, I think you may have just mentioned it in passing.
Because I went to Quark's bar, and there's a... You click on Morn, and then, you know, he says he turns, and they do an animation where he turns to you, and then it like cuts to a black screen, and it says Morn tells this long story, because you say, where have you been? And then when he's done, it says his voice is extremely dry and he wants a drink. So it's like you don't find out this big story, so you still never really get to hear him speak. But it was kind of fun. It was really strange to walk around the promenade, look out, see the wormhole, go to Quark's bar, walk up to the different levels. You forget how high that is. It's just like two or three levels in the station. And going to Odo's, you know, seeing Odo's office and going, it was cool. However, to get there in the game, you got to go through a lot of stuff and until you get up to a certain level to where you're allowed free reign to just fly out into space. So it'll take a couple hours to get out there to get to Deep Space Nine. But I enjoyed it, being a fan of the show. So, But you got to go through Vulcan first, and you get to go up to where Kirk and Spock fought up on the hilltop for the Pon Farr. So you do get to see that, too.
Do you get to climb the steps of Mount Soleil?
Yeah, isn't that pretty much the same place where they were fighting? Kind of. I don't know if that is what that's supposed to be in there. You also get to go down to Starfleet Academy. That's pretty much where you start out. You're a cadet, and then you go to your ship, and the captain's killed or is taken hostage because things have broken out with the Klingons again, and blah, 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 yucky, yada, yada, yada. But it's free. It's free. It's on PC, and it's leased on PlayStation 4. I'm not sure if it's on the Xbox. So enjoy. Play away.
All right. Any more commentary on this one?
No, I think we pretty much discuss the subplot, which is kind of was like a non really, you know, everybody's like, oh, you're gonna win, you're gonna win.
Oh yeah.
And Julian's like, he's like, well, yeah, but you know, you got to be like in your hundreds to even have a chance of winning. So I'm not gonna win. And then Odo, oh, now the one scene with Odo was good where he's like, I have a friend who has a friend whose wife. And all I could think of was the scene from Ant-Man where the guy's going on about. So I talked to the hairdresser who does this, who does this person. And I could, and then it says, apparently so, and or Dr. Wade is not a shoe in the wind. And he's like, well, I don't really care. And then Odo's like, well, then why are you working on your acceptance speech? And he's like, how did you know? Good guess. He's like, So again, we see Odo, the detective. Even if it's only for this one scene, Odo shines through as usual.
Yeah, I'll give you the Odo detective aspect of it as being kind of clever, but other than that, the whole subplot kind of left me cold. I really didn't care. So I didn't think it gave us much of a glimpse into Bashir's personality, even though I guess it was meant to.
I think it was just here, yeah, maybe to just move that along a little bit and filler.
Yeah, they should have just moved that one along home.
Alamoraine.
Oh. Alamoraine. Andy?
I think it's a funny episode. It's an entertaining episode. The subplot didn't really go anywhere, unfortunately, and it's funny largely because of the actors rather than anything else, but it's not a great episode, is it?
No, it's not. It was entertaining, you know. I mean, we're on a streak here where the show is consistently entertaining, but this one just kind of felt like, you know, this is a story we want to tell. It didn't really seem to have any great bearing on anything, and I think we might have a little insight based on that Memory Alpha trivia fact that he had this idea and he wanted to use it and he adapted it for DS9. I think the way he adapted it was fairly clever considering it's a sitcom episode.
Yeah, but this is essentially a sitcom episode.
I was trying to find...
As I watched this one, you know what I really kind of just wondered about? I wondered what would Blaine say? And Blaine says, "Hi guys, another Ferengi episode and another hour of comic relief. First of all, subtle continuity with the woman planning to buy the self-sealing stem bolts." That's true, I forgot about that. "That Quark's been trying to sell since season 1, episode 14. A very enjoyable touch. Wallace Shawn is always welcome as Grand Nagus Zek, and Quark's reaction to the new rules of acquisition is priceless. His solution is also brilliant and completely in character. Prophets, I've come to bargain. As enjoyable as this was, I do have one lingering question. Now that they've found the Orb of Wisdom, where do they think they should look for the Orbs of Power and Courage so they can finally be ready to face off against the Ganon?" Blaine. I'm missing the reference there. Anyone?
No, I don't get that one either. Sorry, I'm just rereading it again.
Okay, that's from the from Zelda. Legend.
Oh,
of Zelda.
Right.
Oh,
as you see, the kids would have got that.
Ganon.
Hey, whippersnappers, you kids today.
It's a video game that only came out 30 years ago. Why would I be up on it?
Don't think I ever played Legend of Zelda. I know, everybody just went,
I never played it, I could tell you that. But I'll trust that Blaine is making a reference that is very much on point, despite my lack of knowledge thereof. So
I find your lack of knowledge disturbing.
Well, do you guys have any more comments, or should we be rating this thing?
We should be rating this thing.
Yeah,
let's
be rating. We be rating this episode. I be going first, being the
the plotter reader. Arr, matey. Excuse me. Put a ham in my throat. Being as the subplot is really no plot at all, but the other stuff is so good, I'm still going to give this... This is still going to be up there as like a... I don't know if it's a 3 point... I'm going to give it a 3.25 because the subplot was severely lacking, but the main story pulls it along. Because, you know, again, it's always a grand... Well, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to give it 3.5. 3.5. Paul's going, God,
that's exactly what I'm doing. Again. I just wrote down 3.25 and I have to cross that out. You suck.
3.5. Because Grand Negasek bumps it up a little bit. It was nice hearing the changed rules of acquisition, with the, they were just so horrible to Rom, and he thought it was a Quark, and he thought it was a code. He's like, read me the first word of each rule. Nah, it's still nothing. So yeah, 3.5 bars of charitable pressed latinum.
Well, I'm gonna go a little lower. I thought it was fairly entertaining. I do think, as we've kind of concluded, that this was a sitcom episode, even in its adapted form. And I think it had funny moments in it. I thought the subplot was very weak. So overall, I'm gonna say enjoyable episode, but nothing really special. 2.5.
I'm gonna go with 3. It was entertaining while you were watching it, and it's quite funny. It's quite a funny show. Wallace Shawn vacillates between being fascinating and quite irritated, depending on what he's doing. But yeah, the subplot. The subplot didn't really go anywhere or do anything for me. So I think this is a solid 3.
Okay, and that's it for Profit Motive. Maybe we should do a little email now.
Huh, I get it. Profit motive. Uh-huh. No, I got it before. I'm doing my character.
You're being facetious.
Yes.
Captain, incoming message.
So, our first email is from John Joyner, who I don't think we've heard from before. And it is titled, A Rave and a Question. Dear sirs, I've only recently discovered your fine podcast and have it on my podcast cycle. Sadly, being a stay-at-home dad with a 2.5-year-old has put my podcast listening to a slow crawl, but I live in hope that once he starts preschool and kindergarten, I can start to catch up. As such, I am only up to move along home.
But
rest assured that given the fine quality and insightful commentary, as well as hilarious outtakes, I will continue to listen till Kai Winn and Gul Dukat become a crispy critters in the final series finale.
Spoilers, dude!
One question I did have, or maybe better it was a point to make about the show's premise, was I don't think I've heard anyone remark on the multiple connections to the British occupation of India. I was struck with so many names and references to it. Vedic, as opposed to Vedic, the religion that gave rise to Hinduism and give them some of the oldest Hindu writing. Jemhadar, as opposed to Jemhadar, a rank in the British Indian Army and phased out after India got its independence. We learn that Bajor had a strict caste system. Constable Odo, as opposed to Lord Odo Russell, a prominent imperialist in the late 19th century. Curzon Dax, as opposed to Lord George Curzon, the Viceroy and Governor General of India around the turn of the last century. That seems to be way too coincidental, to me at least. I was wondering about your thoughts on it. Please keep podcasting, Johnny Joyner. I have to confess, I am not very knowledgeable with regard to British and Indian history, as far as that goes, and all of those tidbits are news to me, but I do agree with you that it's just a bit too coincidental to believe that it wasn't intentional. So I think, yeah, that's probably,
you know, Paul,
what they're making reference to.
If only we had someone that we could ask if they knew something about British history.
Somebody perhaps with some British knowledge.
I don't know. Andy, can you think of anybody?
Maybe we can get Blaine back on.
I don't know anyone.
Maybe the Canadian can help us.
Yeah, the British occupation of India is quite well known. Over here, as part of, well, apart from you, well, obviously not your history, is it? So you wouldn't be expected to know it as part of the British Empire stuff. That is actually, yes, that is actually quite fascinating. I think Johnny's right there. I think the level of coincidence there takes it beyond coincidence. There must be something going on, especially given that the plot of Deep Space Nine to begin with was the Cardassian occupation of Bajor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fascinating.
It's funny that that wasn't in the Bible. You think they might have had a note or something in there, or I mean, have you ever seen that in the Companion or anything? Or
no, it's not in the Companion either. So that's really, thank you, Johnny, for emailing that in. That is really interesting.
So we'll just comparing you to Cardassia, Andy.
Do you know what? I don't mind being a Cardassian.
Gold de Leyland.
The Cardassian are very intelligent people, very refined people, have a keen grasp of the arts, understanding of culture and the good things in life, but we're utter bastards if you piss us off. I can live with that.
Garrick Leyland.
Well, it's Leggett Leyland.
Leggett Leyland.
And but secretly he's a member of the Obsidian Order.
I'm a member of the Obsidian Order. I'm just plain simple, Andrew. I'm just a plain simple podcaster.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, any assassinations that may take place over the next couple of weeks are nothing to do with me.
And John Joyner was never heard of from again.
Sorry, John, but your card is marked. Well, that was a really good email, that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, very impressed with that. Yeah.
And greatly appreciated. Please, when you catch up to us, write in again.
Yes, but just be careful, John. That's all I'm saying.
All I know is when I had a 2.5-year-old
Look both ways
at
while
home,
crossing the street.
When I had a 2.5-year-old at home, that would make for more time for podcasting, because it's not like he would care what was on. Put Barney on the TV, exactly. And I could listen to as many podcasts as I wanted.
I love you. You podcast with me.
But John might be one of those strange parents who actually interacts with his child.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I've said too much.
I haven't said enough.
Probably even knows his birthday.
I know Ben's birthday. It's coming up. Who's got the next email? Me, you?
Oh, it's me, isn't it?
Didn't you just read one?
No, I just
or
read
did no. Oh, okay. So
hold on a second. I'm just gonna say goodbye to Anne. You'll be back in a minute.
Okay.
I'm back.
We know.
Oh, okay.
You gonna read?
Oh, is it me? Yeah, sorry. Well, when I went, we couldn't decide whether it was me or not.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't care. I've got it up.
All right, well, actually, really?
Ew.
Are you looking at pictures of Tracy Scoggins as a Cardassian again?
Mm-hmm. And eating a piece of ham. Mm-hmm.
Well, they're both Gene emails, so I'm not bothered which one I do.
Okay, well, I've got this one open.
Well, you've done one, Bill. You did the short one. I'll do this one. Yeah, it's me. Sorry, what am I talking about? Our next email is Cardassian Mind Bleep. Paul, Andy, and Bill, while I appreciate the idea behind the undercover agent thing, I have a really hard time believing that it would work. There are these little things called tricorders. Maybe you've heard of them. With a quick scan, even 80-plus years prior to this episode's events, it was obvious that a cosmetically altered person was, in fact, a Klingon. If there was any doubt, especially on the part of the Resistance, wouldn't they have just scanned everyone and seen who wasn't Bajoran? Then, when the drugs don't work on Kira, why didn't the Leggett scan her just to be sure? Granted, he's nearly paranoid enough, not only for a Cardassian, but also for a dissident. All of that being said, I did enjoy the episode. It's kind of hard not to join an episode with Garrick front and centre, especially when the byplay he has with Sisko, Robinson and Brooks do an absolutely wonderful job. But I think the top is the fact that we finally get a completely honest statement from Garrick and Sisko picks up on it. Like you guys said, that was perfectly played. If they did a search for Kira over several episodes with this subplot playing out during that time, I think it would have worked better. But it still wouldn't have worked, in my opinion. It's just too easy to prove/disprove what species someone is for the plot to be believable enough to get on with. That might be part of the reason why this was just one and done episode. I say and done because I'm pretty sure that nothing ever comes of this later on. Of course, the way the Cardassians act, along with Bill's Nazi comparison, makes me think of N'Tak as Major Hochstetter and Gemor as General Buchhalter, which I don't think does the episode any favours. Although a reboot of Hogan's Heroes with this cast would be pretty fun. Gene. I know nothing! Nothing!
I would do Hogan's Heroes, only I'd have the red skull there too, so he could say, "You are Starling!"
Out, 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 everybody out! Snap, snap!
Oh, dear, Meg.
You know what? I'm gonna kind of... I was gonna say block no prize Gene's discussion about a tricorder. They could easily just set up a tricorder to say whatever they wanted to say, being the Obsidian Order. I'm sure they could fake whatever they needed to fake to make somebody believe what they want them to believe. So that's why I think that a tricorder in this case would not matter. I think it would have been tampered with already before they got their hands on it.
Unless I guess there was someone else brought in an independent tricorder.
But how can we be truly sure that not everything is what you think it is on Cardassia? Once you start reading that Stitch in Time book, you'll know what I mean.
All right, I will accept your thoughts for what
you accept my challenge
for what they're worth.
Hey.
So, moving on to our next email, also from Gene the Hammer Hendrix. Andy, Bill, and Paul, starting off as you guys did with a subplot and Jake. I liked how this was treated. As Paul pointed out, there's really no way that Sisko could prevent this relationship. So his only real choice is to meet the girl and stay involved. Luckily, it turns out that she's a good person and she and Jake have more than a physical attraction. Very nicely done, in my opinion. It's a shame that the character never comes back. Let's just hope I'm this enlightened when my daughter starts dating. Frankly, nobody's that enlightened when their daughter starts dating. We all just turn into Neanderthals. So good luck with that, Gene.
Rah, boy bad, smash!
As for the main plot, yeah, it's pretty cliche, but I like Odo's mindset in the whole thing. It might be completely useless, but he does everything he can to keep another sentient being out of living in a laboratory. That rings really true for me, and it's something I like them going back to. Like you all said, though, I'm not sure about the "we can't overcome his genetic nature" thing. Every other race can choose to go against their racial nature, but not this one. Genetically engineering them to be addicted to white is fine, but how does one genetically predispose worship and trust of certain entities? This is something that's going just a touch too far to be believable to me. Brainwashing and indoctrination would be better here, especially if he started to come around to Odo's teaching, then more Jem'Hadars show up and kidnap him. Then Odo would be a little hesitant to attack them, just in case the one he's fighting turns out to be Hugh. That might give the Federation some help that they might be able to break the brainwashing and deprive the Dominion of their shock troops. Overall, this was not a great episode, though. I think it's telling that I watched this and the previous one less than a week ago, but while I remembered Second Skin really well, I couldn't remember this until you guys started talking about it. Gene. Yeah, I guess does speak volumes.
Either that or it's just age for all of us, because I watched this, but I don't remember.
What were we talking about?
What show is this?
Anyway, yeah, I pretty much agree with most of what Gene says, but that's almost always the case. He is, after all, the Hammer.
I had a hammer. Hammer in the morning. Okay. Hammer in the evening.
Is that Andy Griffin?
No, that's That's Leonard Nimoy.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Well, I think Andy Griffith did it also, though.
Oh, did he? Oh. Well, Leonard Nimoy also did Bilbo Baggins.
That's true. And Proud Mary.
So he did. Bilbo Baggins.
Have you heard his version of Proud Mary?
Oh, no, I haven't.
Rolling on the river, left a good job in the city.
Okay.
And I guess never even heard it. I can almost guess that's what it sounds like, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's not that far removed from it. I guess that's it for this week. And what do we got going next time?
Next time on an all new episode of Listen to the Prophets.
I'm stalling for time.
An episode I don't remember anything about. Visionary. Do you remember this one?
Not off the top of my head.
Okay. Well, that's what's coming up next.
We'll see. In 2 weeks, we'll talk about it.
Yes, we will.
That may have been one of the most lethargic next times I've ever heard.
I completely forgot to open my Deep Space Nine companion. Sorry.
He sounds so tired. He sounds a bit tired.
Maybe it jumps out that we're doing a three-peat here.
Well, that was a Doctor Who reference, though.
Does she look tired?
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
I left a good job in the city, working for the man every night and day, and I never lost 1 minute of sleeping, worrying about the way things might have been. Big wheel, keep on turning, Proud Mary, keep on burning. In Memphis, I pumped a lot of pain down in New Orleans, but I never saw the good side of the city until I hitched a ride on the Riverboat Queen. Big wheel, keep on turning, Proud Mary, keep on burning. Come down to the river.